DW Deutsche Welle. World in Progress.
Five years ago, the Rana Plaza complex in Bangladesh collapsed, killing more than 1,100 textile workers. What has changed in the industry since then? And women's power in Poland, how Polish women protest the move of the ruling peace party to tighten the country's restrictive abortion law further.
It is important to move forward and to raise our voices. Sexist thinking says that a woman should be quiet and that we're not entitled to raise our voices.
Stay tuned. Welcome to World in Progress from Bonn, Germany. My name is Anke Rasper. It was one of the worst disasters ever in the garment industry. 5 years ago, the Rana Plaza building on the outskirts of Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, collapsed shortly after 9 a.m. in the morning. There were several garment factories at the site and some 5,000 workers had just started their shifts on the upper floors of the complex. More than 1,100 people died and over 2,000 were injured. The catastrophe revealed the dire conditions under which textile workers were slaving away, producing garments for global brands. Bangladesh is the world's second largest garment exporter, after China. Following the disaster, companies promised to improve factory safety and working conditions. Helle Jeppesen reports on what's changed since then. Her story is presented by Gabriel Borat.
The five-story Rana Plaza complex, built on swampy ground outside the capital Dhaka, contained clothing factories, a bank, apartments, and several shops. After cracks were discovered in the building on April 23, 2013, the shops and the bank on the lower floors were immediately closed. But the textile workers were summoned to work the next day. When the building collapsed, many workers were trapped under heavy machinery or buried under concrete. 1,135 people died. Another 2,500 people were injured, making the disaster the deadliest garment factory accident in history. Kalpona Akhtar, a former textile worker herself, is the executive director of the Bangladesh Center for Workers' Solidarity, or BCWS. She says that it was vital for the families of the victims to fight for compensation, because many had lost their main breadwinner, and some of the survivors were handicapped for life.
They did not name it compensation because they don't want it to take responsibility. It was total $71 million we were asking. Lately, we had to, make it downsize, and we ended up making downsize. It is $30 million for all of them because we had to cut the pain and suffering part.
After the collapse, an international compensation fund, the Rana Plaza Donors Trust Fund, was set up to help the victims' families. But only a few of the companies that had rented office space at Rana Plaza actually paid money into the fund. Contributions were voluntary. Yet other companies, organizations, and private citizens contributed as well. In 2015, 2 years after the collapse, the International Labour Organization, ILO, was finally able to announce it had reached the goal of $30 million to start compensating the victims. There's no government-sponsored scheme to pay compensation or medical treatment for the survivors of work-related accidents, says Bernd Hintzmann of INKOTA, a network of NGOs that also supports the Clean Clothes Campaign.
There's a huge gap in social security systems in many countries, not just in Bangladesh. For instance, there's no law regulating compensations and no insurances covering accidents at work, and also no unemployment schemes.
Hintzmann says that workers' rights in Bangladesh and elsewhere in Asia and Africa should be protected with a series of regulations that factory owners, international retailers, and local producers must adhere to. The Rana Plaza collapse was not the first major accident in the textile industry, and others have happened since. But since the disaster, working conditions and safety has actually improved in many factories.
Rana Plaza is dennoch eine accepted.
Rana Plaza serves as an example that victims can win their case after all.
Safety regulations had been massively violated when the upper stories of the Rana Plaza building were constructed. During the lawsuits indicting those responsible for the unsafe building, many said that the fact that the textile workers were told to work despite the cracks in the building was also due to the pressure in the international textile industry that demands a quick turnover of garments that are produced in Asia and sold, for instance, in the United States or Europe. Massive political pressure after the Rana Plaza collapse led to the Bangladesh Accord, an agreement between a number of textile producers and labor unions. It stipulates that national and international textile makers operating in Bangladesh have to adhere to fire and building safety regulations. A lot of that has actually been put in action, says activist Akhtar.
They did all the safety hazards inspection and found almost over 130,000 hazards, which has been taken care of. Necessary and repair and renovation has been done. The Bangladesh Fire and Building Safety Accord has been implemented in their listed factory, which is 1,600 factories, but we have over 4,500 factories across the country.
The Accord has almost 200 signatory clothing brands and retailers from over 20 countries, covering 2.5 million workers in Bangladesh's ready-made garment industry. Akhtar estimates that's about half of Bangladesh's garment workers. Many of the world's largest brands, including Adidas, H&M, and Uniqlo, have signed the accord. The Bangladesh Accord is set to run out in May this year. It will be replaced by a new accord that includes protocols for training and complaints and worker severance payments. After the Rana Plaza disaster, the minimum monthly wage for garment workers was slightly raised to 5,300 taka, or around $65 in 2014. Unions are now demanding 16,000 taka as minimum wage, citing a rise in the cost of living following inflation. In China, the biggest textile exporter, wages are more than three times higher for textile workers. The Bangladeshi government has recently started initiatives to revise the minimum pay for garment workers. Companies say that increasing wages will make Bangladesh less competitive on the international market. The industry accounts for over 80% of Bangladesh's exports.
And the Bangladeshi activist and former textile child worker Kalpona Akhtar says that even an experienced textile worker makes no more than $80 per month, and that's not enough by far to feed a family. For more of a personal take on Bangladesh's garment workers, do check out an in-depth interview with Kalpona Akhtar on our sister show in this week's Worldlink at dw.com/worldlink. Next up here, after a bit of music, a documentary on women's power in Poland. Women across Poland have been protesting attempts by the government to further restrict access to abortion in the past few months. Poland is a predominantly Roman Catholic country, and since the end of communism, it has had one of the most restrictive abortion laws in Europe. Abortions are illegal except in cases of rape, when the woman's life is in jeopardy, or if the fetus is irreparably damaged and would be sure to die in infancy. The ruling Peace Party wants to restrict the law even further, making it illegal to terminate a pregnancy when the unborn baby is malformed and seriously ill. The law still needs the vote in the Polish Parliament, or Sejm. So far, only very few legal abortions take place in Poland. Hundreds of thousands of women reportedly travel to neighbouring countries to have them done. Many Polish women are now resisting the move to further limit their reproductive rights. All across the country, they've been taking to the streets to raise their voices. Here's Sue Cox with a documentary compiled by Jan Palokat.
As the sun sets in Warsaw, a group of women spontaneously gathers in front of the parliament building, along with some men. Hańba, shame, they shout.
Proszę Państwa, lista hańby.
Marek Biernacki! Marek Biernacki! Marek Biernacki!
The list of shame proclaimed here on a cold January night contains unfamiliar names. This time, it isn't representatives of PIS, the National Conservative Ruling Party, a natural enemy of left-wing women's groups, but rather members of the Liberal Opposition are also being criticised.
Joanna Fabisiak!
Joanna Fabisiak!
Name after name is being called.
Oddaj mandat! Przeproś Polki!
So what happened?
Pamiętajcie, brak edukacji, zakaz antykoncepcji i przymus rodzenia to wasza...
A few hours earlier, Barbara Nowacka, a leader of the extra-parliamentary left in Poland, talked to the plenary hall. Her group, Save the Women, collected 400,000 signatures, calling on the government to liberalise the restrictive Polish abortion law, demanding women should be able to decide for themselves if they wanted to have an abortion. Poland currently has some of the most restrictive abortion laws in Europe, with terminations only permitted in exceptional cases. And the Conservative PIS party wants to restrict abortions even further.
Every year, over 10,000 underage girls give birth in Poland. But how many more opt for an illegal abortion? And how many people grow up in fear and humiliation?
A so-called citizens' law that was proposed to liberalise abortion in the country did not make it to the vote in Parliament. It didn't even make it to the stage of being debated in Parliament. In this case, many MPs of the ruling Conservative PIS party voted to discuss it in Parliament. But surprisingly, many members of the Liberal opposition did not even show up for the decision or voted against putting it on the agenda, going against the rule to toe the party line. Katarzyna Lubnauer, party leader of Nowoczesna, the Moderns, is not happy that the law to liberalise abortions did not even get discussed in Parliament, but tries to explain.
Our party is still fairly new, and many of our MEPs weren't aware that this was a vote on whether the proposed law should be discussed, not on the law itself.
Fellow party member Joanna Scheuring-Wiegus, a pro-choice supporter, was appalled.
I am a member of the modern party, not some medieval party.
It was a debacle for the already severely damaged political opposition in Poland. But the women's protests that continue across the country are a sign that outside Parliament, women in Poland are a power to be reckoned with. Anyone who messes with the women loses the elections, demonstrators chant. They also chant, "We are the opposition." Women's power is a fairly new force in Polish politics. It's unpredictable, noisy, and takes to the streets very quickly. The PIS party has also realised this power. In the autumn of 2015, the first attempts to tighten the abortion law disappeared from the political agenda after women took to the streets across Poland. The pro-choice demonstrators wear black as a sign of mourning for their reproductive rights. The women's movement has been popping up again and again, recently under the slogan Strajk Kobiet, Women's Strike.
We have no fixed structure, no fixed address, and no elected members of a supervisory board. We are all leaders.
Says Elżbieta Podleszna from Warsaw, who participates in the women's strike. I first met her in front of the police headquarters in the city centre in November. Along with a dozen other protesters, Podleszna blocked the right-wing March of Independence on a bridge which caused a row. Police later investigated.
We get in touch with each other through social media and the internet. There are also some men that join us. They understand that every totalitarian system begins with the restriction of women's rights, then moves on to impact other parts of society as well. We talk about women's rights in the context of human rights. It's a good indication of what's going on in a society, how society talks about women, how it looks at them, and how violence is used against them.
Grassroots actions such as the women's strike are in many ways countermodels to the ruling Conservatives. The party makes a show of putting women in the front ranks, like former head of government Beata Szydło. But at its core, PIS is a cadre party, led by a man, a patriarch, who still runs everything from the background. It's tightly organised, based on loyalty, and anyone who contradicts the leader is out.
All of us who are part of the strike, we share the conviction that it is important to move forward and to raise our voices. Sexist thinking says that a woman should be quiet and that we're not entitled to raise our voices.
Says Marta Lempert, a building contractor from Wrocław. She is considered to be the initiator of the strike movement. She put forward the idea of a nationwide strike against a further tightening of the abortion law on social media and hit a nerve. The idea spread throughout Poland. And then, one Monday at 4 p.m, women across Poland organised strikes.
It was people on the ground who organized this, not political parties or politicians. The protests happened in 150 cities across Poland and 60 more abroad. There is no organization behind it. I asked online who wants to participate and I wrote a 12-point guide for how to register a demonstration. So women from the small towns in particular did not feel alone. They were able to download the full range of posters and placards. Everyone had a chance to contribute. Those who couldn't join a march could at least get dressed in black. The reaction of business owners was also surprising. No one complained, and there was even a fan page for entrepreneurs who supported the women's strike.
The way this new women's movement expresses itself fascinates a veteran of the struggle for women's rights, sociologist Małgorzata Foszczara, former Minister of Equality in her country.
Back in the 80s, I was naive enough to think that equality is such an integral part of society that it would be impossible to restrict women's rights. And why would you even do that?
The problem today, however, is that gender equality was officially postulated by communist rulers. And more than two decades after the end of the communist system in Poland, the PIS government has now declared war on communism posthumously. They argue that the decades of the communist rule and the People's Republic of Poland were imposed on the Polish people by Moscow. So they want to eliminate the legacy of communism in Poland. That includes changing street names, history books, and people's memories.
The image of feminists in Poland is being discredited as well. Right after the end of communism, the idea of equality was declared communist. They said, let's stop talking about equality, because that was the idea of certain people like Rosa Luxemburg. And all that ought to be buried. It was very difficult to overcome the idea that we owe equal rights to communism. In this respect, the EU and EU regulations have helped a lot. When Poland joined the EU, all of a sudden, everyone claimed that we had always been in favor of gender equality, ever since women got the vote in 1918.
As a result, the alienation of Poland from the EU will also impact gender equality and women's rights. But the country's national conservative leadership is by no means sidelining all women's issues. Law tightening is intended to deter domestic violence and rapists, and there are plans to punish men who don't pay alimonies more severely in the future. The PIS party is also aiming at an ideological change when it comes to women's issues. Left-wing women's groups and women's shelters receive less money, while conservative NGOs are being granted more funds.
Przedziurkuj i dopnij do tego.
Dobra.
Tak. Pod spód, nie? To przedziurkuj.
Okej, okay, tylko chyba nie możesz podpisać, masz, nie?
Tak, to ja jeszcze podpiszę, ja jeszcze zrobię list przewodni, ja to wsadzę i będzie...
Zielona Góra is a city in western Poland, close to the border with Germany. The counselling centre Baba has long been supporting women in need, and it has always had a clear focus on women's rights. Anita Kochaska-Dziedzic, the head of Baba, explains.
We believe in feminism. We are outspoken about women's rights. So we are fairly radical feminists, and because of that, we are considered enemies of the current rulers.
Feminist-themed posters are on display on the walls of the Women's Center. American film star Grace Kelly in an embrace with Cary Grant, except that, unlike the film's original, he's the one who is looking up to her. Another collage shows a chicken that has just laid an egg, with the subline, whoever has the eggs has the power.
Around 80% of the people who come to us are women who have suffered domestic or sexual violence, or have financial problems, or don't get alimony payments after a divorce.
Nie otrzymują alimentów i są biedne.
But for women in need, there is another alternative in the region. The Movement for Women's Issues and Family has just won a public tender. We help people, emphasizes the director, Lucina Hoffmann-Dziedzic, including women who have become victims of physical violence. But she says that there are also many cases of psychological violence, and many of the perpetrators are women, she emphasizes.
Our principle is to help the family. If there's a problem, we'll do everything we can to solve it. We house women and children in a mother's home, or we help financially. We help those most in need of help, and that's usually the children. They usually suffer the most when things are going badly in families.
Focusing on family protection. This approach is more akin to the family policy tastes of the current government than Baba's feminist approach. However, even the more conservative movement, just like the feminist groups, primarily advise women.
W naszym statucie jest wspieranie kobiet, jako że spotykamy się z tym, że one są słabsze, tak?
Our statute says that we support women because they're weaker and are most at risk of violence. They're often weaker economically because many have to take care of children and often can't get paid work. That's why we mainly help women. And for women, the family is fundamental, and that's why we help families as well.
Hoffmann-Dziedzic has quite a lot in common with her colleague from the feminist Baba Women's Center. Both are big, resolute, eloquent women who have firm opinions. But while one stands for feminism, the other says...
I don't feel like a militant feminist, and I don't feel discriminated against, though discrimination might exist.
And then she adds,
kobiety z gruntu są silne, są kreatywne.
Women are strong, that's part of their nature. They're creative, they have brains that are constructed differently. They can adapt more easily. They're able to express emotions. They're undoubtedly a force. Whether they can also be a political force, that I don't know.
But isn't that fairly feminist?
No, nie.
Back in Warsaw, the march of angry women has moved on to the PIS party headquarters.
Wy, posłowie PiS, którzy słyszycie krzyk zygoty i widzicie ból embriona,
I am a woman. I am Polish. And this is what you're saying to me. If I'm pregnant unintentionally, I should have the baby. If I'm raped, I should have the baby. If I'm seriously ill, I should have the baby. If I do not have the money to bring up children, I should have the baby.
For the time being, the government has postponed the tightening of the abortion legislation. But in practice, Polish women often cannot even have a pregnancy terminated in the few cases when it is legal under Polish law. For example, when the fetus has severe malformations. Many doctors are afraid. They don't want to be attacked, says Romuald Debski, chief gynecologist at Warsaw's Bielanski Clinic, where many of the few legal abortions in Poland are carried out.
Most clinics do not carry out any abortions, and those who do risk people demonstrating in front of their building. And because there are so few clinics offering it, not all developmental damage can be diagnosed in time during the pregnancies. We don't have enough resources here in Poland, so 2 weeks ago I had to send a patient to Berlin in Germany.
The morning after pill is still available, but now women only receive it when a doctor prescribes it. At the same time, thousands of doctors have signed the so-called conscience clause, which allows them to refuse to prescribe birth control. Pharmacists often refuse to dispense it. So, particularly in conservative regions, it's hard for Polish women to get contraceptives and take decisions about family planning and their own lives.
Forcing other people to follow certain religious principles contradicts my understanding of a secular and democratic state. For me, that is not a question of faith or conscience, but an individual decision. It's not the task of the state to teach morality.
Says Barbara Nowacka. She is the daughter of a deceased, well-known left-wing politician, and some say she too has the making of a political leader. There is a lot of women's power and many strong women who are ready to take action in Poland. Women hold the potential for a serious counter-movement to the conservative cultural revolution of the PIS party. However, the new women's movement lacks a political party representing them in Parliament. But that's currently not the aim of Poland's women's activists. Recently, left-wing groups, not just women, met for a summit in Warsaw to discuss how to react in a country that keeps moving to the political right. The discussion was organised by Barbara Nowacka, and she stated,
"We're not going to start a political party today because it's not the time. We will not prepare lists with names, and today we will not name the enemy. We will only talk about what is important to us. Someday we will have to be in parliament, but to make it there, you have to acquire credibility and make concrete suggestions first."
And that was Barbara Nowacka, a leader of the extra-parliamentary left in Poland, ending that documentary by our Warsaw correspondent Jan Palukat. Sue Cox presented the report. And due to the continuing protests against the restriction of the abortion law, the vote in the Polish parliament, which was initially planned for mid-April, has been postponed. So far, no new date has been scheduled. If you want to listen back to this or other editions of World in Progress, go to dw.com/worldinprogress. You can also download the podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud. For more globalization stories, check out DW Global Society on Facebook. All the best from us here at the DW studio in Bonn, Germany. My name is Anke Rasper, and we're saying goodbye today with a bit of music by Polish folk group Sutari.